You sound like an old man paying your dues. Just,
you got to pay your dues. You don't respect the art. You don't respect the business. You don't respect any
now
of
you
it.
You really just sound like an old man.
Okay, 127. Tuesday. It's Tuesday. It is Tuesday. Tuesday. I need to make up a new song. A Tuesday song.
Yeah, because
it's a Tuesday song. It's Tuesday, so it's on Taking Pictures.
This is going to be a long episode.
Yes. My name's Jeffrey Sidoris from, where am I from now?
Oh, wow.
I don't have a from.
That's deep.
I don't have a from.
Yeah.
Where'd formerly, the podcaster formerly known as, no. Okay, so, yeah, anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. Formerly, I still from Faded and Blurred, but soon from something new.
Bum, bum, okay. Bum.
Dum, dum, dum. And with me, the fancy, gas main enduring photographer.
Jackhammers are the worst.
They are annoying. They are annoying.
They're really impressive looking pieces of kit though. When you actually just see one lying on the ground.
Yeah.
They're
hardcore. Look like they really are. They look like something that, what's her name? What's the chick in Aliens? That carried
Ripley?
The big gun. No.
Oh,
no,
oh you mean the
in Aliens.
Wasn't she Latino? Not,
yeah.
Oh, what the hell
she
was her
name? A badass.
Yeah, whatever her. Yes, that kind of thing.
Now I have to look it up.
Yeah,
anyway,
we'll look it up.
Looks like something she would carry.
Yeah, true.
And yep. Just go to town on aliens. Hey, but before we get started, can I say a thank you to the people that have written in?
Sure.
About the Faded and the Blurred.
Yeah. So so you're done.
Well, okay. So here's the thing. First of all, I was not prepared for the volume of messages and email that have been sent in over the last week or so. I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of
the outpourings of gratitude.
Well, that or please don't close or please don't shut it down or blah, you know, and maybe I was unclear in the initial. Faded and Blurred's not, it is ending. Faded and Blurred is ending, but it is becoming part of something bigger. So I am not abandoning photography. I love photography. I love everything about photography. Well, almost everything about it. It's just going to become part of a bigger conversation. There are other conversations that I want to have around art and around design and around performance, like opera and dance, and so photography will be a component. It just won't be the only component. And I think Faded and Blurred will probably stay the way it is. It'll just point to the new thing, which will be more details soon, but just thank you for your energies and your time and all of the things that you had to say. It's been it's very strange that yesterday was strange because I didn't have anything
a post to write.
Yeah, I didn't have anything to do for Faded and Blurred, and that's weird after. You know, 5 years, give or take, of working on it. But I am hard at work on what's coming next.
Yeah.
So that feels really good. But yeah, I just wanted to say thank you and sort of reassure you that the photography isn't going to go away. It's just going to become part of something else. It goes back. A lot of the things we talk about go back to Jay Mazel and his alleged comment about, you know, photographer asks, what do I do to be a more interesting photographer? And Jay famously responds, become a more interesting person. Right. What I'm trying to do is bring in more influences in the creative and visual arts that we can pull from, not just photography.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I think it's good.
Yeah. I'm super, super excited about it. And it's good. Lots of new areas, lots of new, it will be much more collaborative. platform. I've been talking to some people that I've wanted to talk to for years who have graciously agreed to come on board as either a conversation or as a collaborator slash contributor. So it couldn't be better. I'm super excited about it. So yay.
Speaking of people who, you know, are winning, how do we pronounce her name?
I think it's Nusha Tavakolian.
Tavakolian. Okay.
We talked about her last week. She was the photographer who ended up giving back the 50,000 euro Carmignac award.
Yep. Because the Carmignac, the guy, the head of it, was trying to tell her how to do her job.
Right.
Yeah. So what happened? What's interesting, I think, is that she writes this on her Facebook page.
Yes.
Which is an interesting choice.
She writes, 2 weeks ago, I posted a statement to my Facebook page saying that I returned the 2014 Carmignac Award, a 50,000 euro prize, three exhibitions, and a book. I did so after months of debate with the award's patron over the control of my work. The many, many messages of friends, photographers, and others from around the world have been amazing, and I wanted to thank everybody for supporting artistic freedom, which should not be just a slogan, but respected. Indeed. This weekend, the Carmignac Foundation had a huge turnaround, promising that from now on there will be no more interference in my project, and that two key jury members will be in charge of curating my work, exhibitions, and book. I've decided to accept these new conditions, as for me, this was one thing only to be able, as a photographer, to choose the title, edits, and text of my work. This would never have happened without the deep commitment shown by the jury members who have stood up for the main principle that makes us all love photography, journalism, and art, freedom of expression. So,
basically they got a big enough spotlight on them because of all the press she got, that they changed their mind.
I don't know the details behind it, but, bravo to her for sticking to her guns.
Sure.
And bravo to the Carmignac Foundation for letting the artist, have control over his or her work.
Yep. Yeah.
So well done.
So now they're guaranteed artistic freedom, and they're, it's somebody on the jury who ends up curating for the year. So yeah, it's good.
Terrific. Yeah.
The best possible outcome.
Yeah, integrity.
Well, integrity or pressure?
I think it began with integrity. Yes, there was pressure. There was press.
Wait, you're saying her integrity?
Her integrity. Yeah.
Okay. No. I agree. I thought you were saying that like the award had integrity by changing their things. Okay.
Her by saying, look, I will not be compromised. Bravo. Yeah. Well done.
I agree.
Well done.
Good for her.
Enough about that.
So we have a big Q&A.
Big Q&A.
Lots and lots of stuff from 400 million people and a couple of repeats in here. People, I like when people like come up with a question and then like 3 days later, they're like, oh, I have another question.
That's okay.
I know.
Bring them.
Yeah, I know.
Bring them in.
Where do you want to start? You want to start or you want me to start?
You start. Go ahead.
Jeremy Bryant. Let's see. Working up the nerve to go on a portfolio review critique and was curious if either of you had pointers for this process. Are there more reputable critiques to go to? How many photos should you have in a portfolio for a critique? Unified theme or assorted images? Better to have physical prints rather than an iPad, 8x10 and above for size. Should I even bother to go to a portfolio review in this digital age of ours when I can get just as much advice online? Any tips would be appreciated.
I have very little to say to this because I've never done one.
Either have I. Although... some of these portfolio reviews to me feel like just money making things for the people involved.
Kind of like photo contests. Like,
yes. Very, very, very similar.
$100 per photo to enter.
Yeah. And if somebody on the jury is known to you and you respect them in some really deep way, then sure. If you want to spend the money to go, I don't really see much point in them in the sense that, yeah, you can put your stuff in and talk about it online. Now you might not get the dean of the such and such art school in whatever city you're in is the guy doing it or something. Like maybe that's the case and maybe he's a useful person to show your work to, but it always feels a little bit like a scam to me.
I will say I have known I know several people who have reached out to artists or photographers that they respect and have written a nice email and said, hey, could you take a look at a couple photographs?
Yeah.
And the response more often than not has been positive.
Although then you also have the people like Kevin Smith, who's just like, can you look at my script? He's like, no. Because if I look at your script and then someday I write something that looks something like your script because it got back into my brain somewhere, you're going to sue me and, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are busy. So I you're right. It could be. You know, yeah, you could write. I mean, you and I get emails sometimes from people saying, hey, do you mind looking at my work and tell me what you think?
Which I'm happy to do. I don't know what advice or what my opinion means, but I'm happy to do it.
Therein lies the rub is that, like, what is expertise in this area? You know, are you looking for somebody to tell you what they know to be more marketable or profitable, whether it's good art, whether it's original, whether it's, you know, trying to make you into the best artist you can become, or, you know, who knows, right? Any sort of combination of those.
You and I have talked about this several times, that for every person that loves X photo, there are going to be Y people that don't.
Yep. Happens all the time. And then there are also people who I've talked about my work to and said, oh, you know, so-and-so said that I should do this. And so I did that. And then they go, oh God, that's a terrible idea. But then they look at the work and they go, oh, this is a good idea. And so it is honestly, it's like rolling dice in my experience. It's like, you never know how somebody's going to react. And you don't know if that person had their coffee that day, you know what I mean? Or this one picture looks like some picture that their ex-boyfriend once made. So therefore they're going to not like yours because, you know what I mean? Who knows? You know,
it's very, very hard to assess whether it's helpful in any sort of empirical sense or whether it's just helpful as a hug.
Right. Exactly. There's no objective understanding of what actually is going on there. Now, as far as, you know, unified theme, assortment of images, I mean, this is the same stuff as portfolios, right? You know, there's stuff that I shoot that isn't on my site because it's not what I need to do professionally, and people want a more concise thing, and people think even my set of stuff is too diverse, and, you know, you just got to go with your gut and go with what you believe. I think the 8x10 should probably be the smallest you're going to show some people. If you're going to talk about prints, you think if they put out one of these big iPads next year, it would be a good portfolio book?
I think it's going to, if they put out a 12 inch,
$1,000, then it's going to be an expensive portfolio.
Yeah. I think if they put out a 12 inch iPad, it will sell. It's sort of, I don't know. It's contrary to what I want an iPad for. So I would not buy one.
Yeah.
If I'm going to buy something with a 12 inch screen on it, then I would probably get something like an Air.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. If they put out a new little 12 inch Retina Air, that'd be a nice little machine.
That would be a nice little machine, and put it out for like $899.
I don't know if they'll be able to do that, at least in the first year.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Jeremy, in answer to your question, I don't know. Both Jeffrey and I don't know, have never been to one. I've been invited to a lot of them. I get lots of emails saying, hey, would you like to come? The ASMP and the APA and all those things always have juried portfolio reviews and stuff. I don't know that I see the point very much, at least for the kind of work that I do. Not that I can't improve, but just that I don't know that going and talking to people about my work like that would be what I want or what I think would help me improve. I think for some people who are doing, if you're doing more like straight artistic stuff, talking to other people, maybe pushing in different directions might be interesting. I don't know.
But again, it's going to come down to something very subjective.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So if all you want is more input, then sure. You might not know if that input's useful or good or true, you know,
but
what are you going to do? Next one.
Tyler Grinstead. I love Q&A episodes. Thank you. We
do
too. Are there plans for trying to develop more challenges for the community? Maybe collaborations or giving more restrictions on assignments such as image size or specific style? What about having community voting if possible? for their favorite submission where the winner gets a shout out on the podcast or something. I feel like we have a strong community here. So do I. And I'm curious what the plans are for developing a stronger interaction between all of us. Terrific question. Right now, I see Google Plus as the biggest limitation in that it's really not, I don't really know what it was designed for, to be honest with you, because it's very hard to find anything. You don't have much control over threads in terms of making sticky threads or following a thread, or it's really not.
If you could put images into comments, I think that would help a lot.
That would help a little, sure. 500 pixels just added groups, and you can vote up or down topics.
Like Reddit or
Dig, yeah, like right? Reddit or Dig.
My only concern with voting, and I mean, I think that there's a certain amount of that with the, you know, plus wanting stuff and comments, even on the stuff on our current group.
Yeah.
I don't want to turn it into a popularity contest or a making. What one of the things I like about the current group is that it's a very welcoming place. That's very sort of egalitarian. Everyone puts stuff up, and there are different levels and there are different styles. And
absolutely.
I'd hate to lose that. Just my 2 cents, you know.
Absolutely. I completely agree. My big problem is just the actual architecture of Google Plus. It's fair a enough. Mess.
Yeah.
It's an absolute mess. I don't know who, since Google Plus came out, I don't know who the end user is. Who is their target? What is it that you're trying to do? Because if it's trying to foster communication and interaction, then there should be ways to keep track of those things that you're interacting, those conversations that you're interacting with.
Yeah.
And there's not. You know, if I want to look for a post that happened, I either have to know the title, the name, or some sort of subject matter to search for it, and maybe it'll show up, maybe it won't. Yeah. Beyond that, it's very difficult to organize anything.
Yeah, I agree that the finding stuff in there is terrible. I don't think it's quite as bad as you, as far as just layout and all that kind of stuff. Like it's a grid of stuff. Like if it was a straight sort of forum and you couldn't see the images, you just get a list of the titles of whatever it is. Like that's also doesn't work either. So it's got to be somewhere in between the two. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if there's an answer.
More of a look at 500 pixels. I don't know. In terms of more challenges, yes, I would like to change those up a little bit. It would be interesting. Maybe we can do. Yes. Ooh, collaborative. Maybe there are diptychs where one person does one and the other person does the other, and they have to sort of thematically work somehow. So it fosters some communication between the two. Yeah. Like you get a diptych buddy or something. I don't know. Well yeah. So yes, more to come.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Millie's got a practical question here. I have a small contract with a daycare I work for. I take care. I'm taking their pictures individually, all 65 of them. Three good shots each. Wait, 65 kids, three shots apiece? So 200 final images? Wow. With group shots, even more. I'm working in a not very well lit space, 400 ISO, f/5.6 at a 30th of a second without a flash. All right. So I have a small flash with a white umbrella that I want to set up as a key light. I'm scared that the flash will give out at me mid session. Should I rent a second flash or maybe even a third one? Do you ever, shoot little kids like that? 1 to 5 year olds, or is this your nightmare situation? I have the advantage of knowing all of them. They know me. Okay, well let's do the technical thing first. Yeah, you could use a speed light. If you're actually going to be doing this more often, either get a battery pack for the speed light if you think the battery is going to die, or an extra set of batteries that you can just swap out quick, or you know, spend $220 on a small alien bees that you plug into the wall, so you know something like that.
Like an AB400 or something.
Yeah, which would be way more power than Millie needs, and you know, never super light, and you know, then you don't have to worry about the thing conking out. As for have I ever shot kids? I mean, I have shot 1 to 5 year olds, nieces and nephews and friends' kids and that kind of stuff. Never really professionally. It is somewhat my nightmare scenario, unless they're sleeping, in which case it's easy. Yeah, I don't know. It's I wonder if she, when she says rent a second flash or maybe a third one, is that to replace the one when the one dies or to set up a multi-light setup? You know what I mean?
Like different stations.
Yeah, maybe.
I would rather have one station and just kind of run them in sort of factory style.
Yeah, I mean, look, you probably don't need, if you're actually shooting at what you're shooting at, and really what you're going to end up shooting at is, I don't know, let's say the 60th or 100th of a second at F8 at ISO 400 on her little, she uses one of those little Fujis, right? That's probably a speed light at, I don't know, 8th power, 16th power. You know, you should be able to get, you know, 400 pops out of a flash like that.
Let's see, in my living room, using a Yongnuo 560 Model 3.
Yep.
I was at 16th power.
Right.
At 125 at 5.6 at 200 ISO.
Okay. So, right. So if she's a 400, you get another stop, which is F8. So yeah, exactly what I said. Yeah, if you're at 16th power, 8th power, like you know, you don't need a whole lot of flash to do that.
Maybe get a couple more set of end loops or something.
Yeah, and get some end loop batteries just as another set. But I wouldn't go crazy. I mean, if you really were going to be doing this a lot and you knew that sometimes you'd want to plug in, there also is a slightly different look to a bigger flash popping into an umbrella in the sense that something like an Alien Bees or whatever it is with a reflector, it's the initial pop is bigger, if you know what I mean. Like it's like a larger flash tube, so it fills the umbrella more. So it's an even more sort of wraparound light. So it may actually look even a little different,
right,
than you were expecting. So yeah, I don't know if that helps at all. But yeah, I think another set of batteries and stuff, you should be fine. You're up next, Matheson.
Okay, Matheson. Christopher Matheson, what's been your favorite episode of OTP? What exactly makes it your favorite?
Wait, can I guess what your favorite episode is?
Yes.
Is it the Come to Jesus episode?
No.
Okay. I was wondering.
No, that's up there.
I was wondering about that.
No, that's up there. My favorite episode is Artistic Monkhood.
You know, I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
I have to go back and listen to it. Do I just remember it being that good, or was it?
I don't know that it was that good. I mean, maybe it was, but I remember that sort of monologue. That was the first. It was the first time I think that I really sort of realized where we could go with this show and what we could talk about.
Yeah,
and what listeners would come along for the ride for. And that was really important to me. I was very thankful for that moment.
So this is episode 43, and I will put a link in the show notes.
I would like to ask this back of you guys. What's your favorite episode and why? And podcast at ontakingpictures.com. What's been your favorite episode out of 128 episodes.
It's a hard question to answer.
Yeah.
Mostly because I think that there's probably a dozen episodes which have a chunk of time, say 10, 15, 20 minute period that I think is gold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's just sort of trying to remember which episodes those were, you know, and how, you know,
yes.
we should actually figure out a way. Didn't we talk someday about people sort of sending in what their favorite codes in episodes.
Yeah.
Their favorite moments of the show.
See if we can do that. Let's see if we can make an effort.
A 3-hour best of.
It could be useful. So what's your favorite episode and why? Back at you. Thank you, Christopher.
Yeah. Cotton Mather. Isn't Cotton Mather, isn't that a famous guy? Sort of like when I shot that Wendell Willkie guy the other day a few months ago, and I was just like, I know that name. And it turns out his grandfather ran for president.
It's a great name, though.
Cotton Mather, yeah.
Okay. This is you.
Is me. Sorry. Okay. So you may have told us in the first episodes, but how'd you guys become friends? Wait, who says we're friends?
What? Yeah, friends. Friends is a loose term.
Yeah. It's As his friend of the show, so
how?
No, I'm sorry. Oh. Actually, friend of the show is actually more friend than Jeffrey and I are.
Alan Baylor just drove his van off the road.
When, where, etc. And why did you start this venture? I've been listening to nearly all the shows, but I'm older than Jeffrey, so my memory may have failed me. Let's see. The quick version. Jeffrey asked me to do a podcast on Faded and Blurred, which we could link to. Can you give me a link to that thing? We'll stick it in here. So we did an interview. We stayed in touch. Jeffrey came on as a guest for Circuitous Conversations, a podcast that I had before this one. And then when Dan Benjamin suggested that I do a photography show called On Taking Pictures, I asked Jeffrey if he'd be interested in doing it. And it kind of went from there, right? Is that fair?
Yes. Yeah.
Although we've met in person a few times too.
Yeah. The first show that we did was kind of the audition. Bill had to audition me, you know, cause he's fancy like that. So he had a few people.
It was less me, auditioning you than, trying to come up with a show that Dan liked.
Yeah.
And then it sort of went from there.
That was the first show. That audition, quote unquote, was the first episode.
And the funny thing about it is that in some ways, all of you have listened to probably 70% of all the conversations we've ever had.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have little exchanges and snippets.
Yeah. Few like more private things than this, but mostly this is the 200 hours that you guys have all listened to. Is our relationship, which is interesting and kind of makes it fun because it's a record of everything that we've talked about.
Yeah, it's terrific.
So that's how the show came to be. And then, you know, initially started out, and then I think it was somewhere around the 30s or 40s when we started deep diving more.
Yeah. And I'm glad we went
up, held our breath, and we went really far down.
Yeah. Yeah. See, and you know what? It's, I so look forward to this show every week.
That's why he gets up at 4 a.m.
That's right. I do get up really early, but I'm up anyway, so it's okay. I look forward to the feedback. I look forward to seeing what you guys post in the group, which is always encouraging and inspiring to me. It's been really good. It's been really good. All right. Alan Baylor. Are we done with that?
Yeah, okay.
All right, Alan Baylor. Bill, how do you come up with prices for images already taken? You've talked about people coming to you for pics in your archive for prints, ads, etc., and have a price. How do you come up from it? Is there a standard range, or how much are they willing to pay, like weddings, or just from experience of what people will pay? Any pointers or guidance to some sort of standard cost for the guy who has a magazine asking to use a picture that you took situation? That's a
tough question.
Tough one. Yeah.
Or a tough one to answer. Mostly it comes down to how much they're willing to pay. You can throw out a number. You can say, well, how much do you have budgeted for this? Different magazines, for example, generally have rate sheets for themselves. So, we're going to use this full half page. So our standard fee for a half page photo is, I don't know, say $250 or whatever it is. Sometimes I can't tell if they're lying or if they really do have policies like that, you know, or if it's just, that's the line they use. And if I said, well, it's $500, but but you really need the picture, so you're going to pay me $500. I have said ridiculous amounts of money, not ridiculous amounts of money, but instead of $400 to use a picture, I've said $600, and sometimes they say fine, and sometimes they say we have $175. There's absolutely no rhyme or reason to any of it, as it were, or at least I haven't found any. I have found that the best paying gigs and people who want to buy your stuff are sort of the mid-level magazines, in the sense that they're not the big national news magazines and stuff. Like, you know, Time doesn't pay as much as, you know, Lawyers Weekly does, if that makes any sense. You know, I'm just throwing names out. I don't even know if there's a Lawyers Weekly, but there's something about sort of the mid-level magazine, very like interest specific kind of thing that tends to, not be quite as annoying and stingy. But it's really tough when it comes to ads. Well, then you get into, well, you know, for how long, how big, how are you going to use it? And the, you know, there are formulations for all that kind of stuff. Those are the times when you're really glad you have an agent, because those conversations suck and they can be the bad cop while you could be the good cop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In fact, my current agent once said to me, she's just like, you know, just send them to me. Like, I have no problem being the jerk.
Yeah.
You know, where I hate asking for more money, cause I feel like it, you know, it's going to make them not want to work with me, cause I'm a pain in the neck. She can ask for more money and that's their problem with her. And I stay somewhat insulated from it. So yeah. So in conclusion, it's tough. I mean, if you want to, Alan, specifically, if you want to send me an email and just, you know, run it by me specifics, you know, I can give you an idea, but it really, there's no standards. And I will tell you that as time goes on, there's less standards, you know,
right.
Because things are changing so much and, oh, we're only using it online, or, oh, we're only doing this. It's like everything is different and people want to pay less and less. That's one of the good things about, you know, like I've said before, it's one of the good things about being a portrait photographer in this world, in the sense that, like, if they like your picture of, say, the Grand Canyon, well, there are a ton of pictures of the Grand Canyon out there. So if you don't want to give them a good price, they can ask somebody else or find stock or whatever. But, you know, if you need a picture of some author and there aren't that many pictures of that author and I've got one of them, that's good for me. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's a little more specific. But so, yeah, that's that. Jeffrey, there's no question from you, but you're awesome. Don't ever forget it. This is Alan Bellward.
Thank you, Alan. I don't know that I agree with you, but thank you.
Tyler. Okay, for each of you, if you could choose one place on each continent to do a photo shoot. So wait, we got seven continents apiece. Where would it be?
Ooh.
Likely excluding Antarctica. Okay, so six continents apiece.
Okay, so let's see. North America. Let's see. Where would I want to go in North America? I don't know. Geez. I wouldn't mind going back to Toronto. That was fun. Toronto's a nice city.
Toronto.
Chicago. Never been to Chicago. That would be fun.
It's a top of town.
New Orleans. That would be fun. Anyway, okay. So South America. Peru, maybe.
Okay.
I have a friend that spent a few months there and he loved it. Europe, Florence, easy. Asia, Bangkok, so I could visit Tom Hoops.
Okay.
Australia, Perth, so I could visit Kingsley Burton.
Okay.
Hi, Kings. Africa, I don't know.
What's the word I'm looking for? Like Kenya, sort of the
maybe
lions
Kenya,
and tigers. And-
yeah. Maybe that. Yeah. Antarctica. I wouldn't mind seeing it, you know, but I don't like being cold. So
I just want to go on a boat and like go on a little boat all the way up to like this, like some wall of ice in front of me and just like hack a thing into it and pop a chunk off and then say, all right, I've touched Antarctica and turn around.
Yeah. Okay. What about you? All the others?
Let's see. North America. I got to say that I really liked the Sequoias. So I'm a big trees guy. So maybe go back there. You know, I met a girl the other day, just a quick aside, named Whitney, and at Ollie's wedding. And I said, Whitney, I said, your parents like live in California? And she's like, how did you know that? And I was like, she's like, yeah, I'm named after Mount Whitney.
Nice.
Because they used to climb a lot. So I go there. Let's see. South America, you know, I would go for Chile. I hear the mountains, the valleys up in the mountains of Chile are some of the most beautiful things in the world. And I haven't been to South America, so that would be there. Wait, would you go for Florence over in Europe?
Yes.
Yeah, Paris, maybe Venice. I think Florence is a great place. I love Florence. It's definitely in my top 10. But I think Paris or Venice is more photogenic as far as taking pictures. Maybe Amsterdam, but I haven't been to Amsterdam, so I can't comment. Let's see. Asia. I want to go to Hong Kong. Not at the moment, but I see, do want to go to Hong Kong.
Oh, that would be a, I might have to revise because I would love to go to Tokyo.
Yeah, Tokyo is weird, but yeah.
And visit Matheson.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been to Tokyo. I thought it was really cool. But I'd like to go somewhere else if I go back to Asia. And then, if I was going to go down, I might go New Zealand instead of Australia. Am I really pissing off people in Australia? Like if I'm going down there. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine who's from Australia because Conrad and I were considering going down there at some point. But the flights end up being like $3,000, $2,600 per person round trip. And I'm like, I can't spend $6,000 on plane tickets, you know, to go on a flight that's 24 hours long. So you got to figure that out. But yeah, I guess that's it. And then Antarctica, I'd love to go to Antarctica.
Wait, Africa.
Oh, Africa. Man, that's tough. See, because I'd love to go to, I really want to go to Egypt, you know?
Not right now.
No, not right now. Well, that's the problem. I don't really want to go to Kenya right now either.
Right.
South Africa is supposed to be really beautiful. My sister's been there. She said it was really something. I don't know. Africa's a tough one because it's totally different things, you know,
right,
all over the place.
There's idealized Africa and there's real world Africa.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Okay. Nicholas Govis.
Yeah.
What makes a portrait succeed when the subject is unknown to the viewer? Does or should the celebrity of the subject make any difference in the way a portrait is conceived or made?
It does.
I would think that it does. Yeah. Just from time constraints or input from the other people that are there, or
I think there are a lot of pictures of celebrities that if it was just your Uncle Tom wouldn't be considered as great of a picture, you know, mm-hmm. Like sometimes it is what somebody knows about the person imbues some sort of meaning to the photograph that the photograph doesn't inherently have, you know.
Sure.
Some beautiful woman or actor or politician, you know, like you look at a picture of Bill Clinton and could be your Uncle Joe. Oh, but no, it's not. It's the president of the world. So, you know, like he has a certain look on his face and that means something more because he is president, you know.
But was he the president of the world?
Well, you know what I'm saying. Like, you know.
I don't think there is a president
of
the world.
You know what I'm talking about. The most powerful man in the world, president of the United States. Let's go there.
There you go. There you go.
Should it? What do you think? Should it?
Wait,
should the celebrity subject make any difference, or it does, and therefore it's a silly to even discuss the opposite?
I don't think the fact that they're a celebrity should. I mean, I think isn't the goal of a portrait is to capture the personality or a personality trait of
yeah.
But the
even,
sitter.
But yeah? Is even that folly in the sense that a lot of the best portraits that we talk about a lot are, and you're going to complain for that with this one. A lot of the portraits that you and I see that we think are really great from photographers that we like are a lot of actors and entertainers and people who are in the public eye a lot, in which case they know how to put on a face, you know?
Wait, so, why am I going to complain about that?
Well, just saying that, you know, there are great portraits of people who don't like getting their picture taken as well. But I mean, but a lot of the ones that we say are so great, it's partially because, like, who were we talking about the other day who does the pictures of the actors, you know, acting out for the New York Times? Was it Schatz or somebody else?
Schatz does it with like a triptychs.
Yeah, like those kinds of things.
Yeah, you know? Howard Schatz.
Yeah. Again, if you get your Aunt Mildred in there, she's not going to look that cool unless your Aunt Mildred is really, you know, can sort of emote in that way. But those people do because they're actors. They know how to do that job. You know, same thing with models looking sexy or whatever. You know what I mean? But how do you succeed? That's what makes a portrait succeed when the subject is unknown to the viewer.
I have seen a lot of terrific portraits that I have had no idea who these people are.
Yes, but you also don't know if that is a good portrait of them, not knowing them. You know what I mean?
Right.
You,
I can say
they're a great portrait, but yeah, you don't know if it's an accurate portrait, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah. So then it's, I think there's a lot made of the whole, I know the person because I can see it in this picture. It's like, well, that may or may not be true. You may or may not be right. But I think that's sort of put on it as a second layer. of when, you know, sort of analyzing it. And that's sort of what people want to think that they're seeing. Sometimes it's just a great picture of a person, you know, and doesn't really tell you much of anything about them, but that's okay too. Maybe, I don't know. You know, my thing is I try to take pictures of people that they years later are going to think is a really good portrait of them. You know, I want them to think it's a good portrait of them. Not necessarily, you know, I can't control anybody else, but like if they say, oh, that's me. And usually that if that happens, not initially, but later on, that's a better sign. Because initially, sometimes it may show, you know, warts and all that they're not proud of, or they don't like the way their eye looks, you know, because it's a little whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like they see the faults initially.
Sure.
But then later, sometimes it wears on them. And so then they kind of come along with it. Good question, Nicholas. I don't know if that there's a good answer. I mean, I guess we've been talking about it for 5 minutes. So.
All right. Gary Rosenfeld, how does an amateur photographer find models for portrait shoots or other projects? I don't have a high-end website, no connections in the community, no big portfolio to share. I've exhausted all my family and members and friends. Any suggestions? I don't know. Model Mayhem, Craigslist.
Craigslist. Depends on where he lives. But yeah, Craigslist works. I've used Craigslist before. Yeah, Model Mayhem. Friends of friends on Facebook. You know, it's tricky. I mean, if depending on what kind of town you live in, go, you know, he says he has no connections with the community. Well, maybe you need to go make some connections with the community. Go introduce yourself to the guy who runs the diner down the street, and because he'll know everybody, you know, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, everyone who takes pictures of people has this problem in the sense that you need the other person in order to take pictures. If what you're trying to do is portraits. So, yeah, I would say, you know, just start introducing yourself to people. I was walking down this, I was on the way to the gym the other day, and about 2 blocks away from here, there's these 3 garage doors sort of on the street, which is not really normal for this area. You know, there's sort of like this garage that's been there for a long time. And this, the third door, sometimes it's open and it's full and it looks like a movie set. Like it's not just a bunch of junk. It looks organized inside, you know? And I've seen the guy working there. He has like a motorcycle or something he works on. And I saw him outside the other day and I went up to him and I said, hi, you know, excuse me. My name is Bill Wadman. I live around the corner and I'm a photographer and I'd love to come take your portrait one day in front of your garage. I think it's really cool. And he was like, oh, thanks. Yeah, sure. Anytime. Like, you know, we shook hands and, you know, traded stuff. So sometimes it's just easy like that, you know? I don't know. Did he have a part two to this one? Oh, he did. Let's see. I often get inspiration in other people's work. However, I am, like everyone else, trying to find my own style. Curious if either of you could talk about the tipping point when you found a style that was unique to you. Was it years, months, or ever? What do you think?
I don't think finding a style, looking for a style, cultivating a style, I don't know that you can. I think that a style, if it's going to be something more than fashionable, has to emerge in hindsight.
Yeah.
I don't think you can. I think if you're shooting for a particular style or painting for a particular style or writing for a particular style or whatever, you end up doing what's fashionable. It's I think it's just a natural reaction. You see somebody doing something, you know, say, well, can I take a little bit of that and infuse it into my work? But is that really your work? I don't know. I think a style has to emerge over a period of time, over a body of work, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess his question is like, is there a chance that it might never happen?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess that's a possibility. I think that as the more you do it, the more you sort of fall into creative gravity holes, you know, like places that you feel natural to sit mm-hmm. in. And I think you gravitate, towards certain looks or certain compositions or certain lighting setups because they're the ones that make you feel comfortable or satisfy you artistically or, you know, somehow give your work meaning. And therefore, when you start doing a number of those things, then it starts refining itself. So I think there's sort of a natural, you know, anybody who does something enough, you're going to come up with certain things you do all the time, you know, certain like looks and stuff, whether that's a style, whether people perceive it as a style. Sometimes it's in the colors that you choose to things you choose to do in post-processing that give it some sort of meaning. You know, if you're the guy who does black and white and really crushes the blacks and does this and sharpens this way, like, you know, then your pictures are going to have some sort of holistic consistency just from the look, certain focal lengths, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
It's a tipping point. I will tell you that my own stuff, I think that there have been a few tipping points. But I think, like, if you look at, let's say, the 365 Portraits project, from the beginning of the year towards the end of the year, the look becomes much more homogenous towards the end of the year. Like, I sort of was bouncing all around at the beginning, and then I sort of funneled into what I liked to take. So even within a year, you can go through and look at how I think that, like, the last month is much more cohesive than the first month, both because I got more practice and because...
Was that intentional? Or was it a byproduct of...
It was a byproduct of just doing it all the time, I think. Yeah. So it wasn't intentional, but I was all right with it, you know? And then there are other times when, you know, you get tired of taking the same picture and you take some other picture, you try some other lighting setup and you go, oh, that's cool. And you go on a tear for that for a while, you know? It's kind of like, you know, big examples of it would be like the way Picasso was like, oh, I did the blue period and then, oh, it's all cubism. And then it's all, you know, it's like, you just kind of go off on tangents.
Sure.
Gary's got one more here. You want to read it or you want me to read it?
No, go ahead.
I hope I'm not violating policy by posting too much. He's got one more. Specifically, how can any artists, painters, writers, etc., stay motivated during gap between taste and talent? Oh, you're going to love this one. In other words, I think I know what makes art good, but my skills are not yet at that level. It's frustrating sometimes. I'd be curious how others have navigated this period of time while staying focused. I don't know. For me, I feel like I'm still in that period or keep finding a new one further down the road. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I stopped. I stopped doing anything.
Yeah, but you're writing. You write all the time.
I do write all the time. Not as much as I should. And I've adopted some new practices just in the last short period of time that I think are going to help. I don't write or I didn't write for pleasure much, but now I've started to write for pleasure. I've started to just say, okay, I'm going to do 1,000 words a day.
Right.
Regardless of whether it goes anywhere, regardless of whether I post it somewhere, I pick a subject, I pick a topic, I pick an interest, and I write 1,000 words on it. Shooting, I don't shoot a lot. I don't make a lot of photographs. In fact, I've resigned to sell my X-Pro and go in a different direction. Painting, I stopped painting, but I started again. How did I stay motivated? I still look at other work. I still am inspired by other work. I just didn't feel like I had anything to say.
Okay. But you think that when you do pick up the brushes and do the thing, that your end result is up to the level of that your mind wants it to be?
No, never. Right. There's always more to learn. There's always more to express. There's always, whether it's technical, whether it's different techniques that will get me there, or different mediums entirely. I'm realizing that some of the directions visually and technically I want to go in, acrylics aren't going to be the best choice. I mean, I'm going to need to go into encaustic to be able to do what I want to do. Now, the benefit of that is it will give me the ability to produce a similar look and feel to the work that I produce now, but I don't have to wait 4 hours between layers for everything to dry.
Right.
So my potential productivity will go up. I can try new things more readily and see if they work. And if they don't, I can scrape it away and start over again. So I think staying motivated is a byproduct of, or it can be a byproduct of, the passion you have for creating.
Yeah. Okay.
Even if you don't have anything to say, you're still going to look at what other people have to say.
Yeah. The whole satisfaction with skills versus what you know to be good. It's a little bit like a rabbit, right? Sometimes you'll get up and almost catch the rabbit, and then the rabbit moves. You know, the rabbit's always going to be ahead of you. So
sure.
So I think that's yes, you may think that you know what makes art good right now, or your perception of what you think is good.
Sure.
Your skills aren't up to it. Your skills will improve. And then just as you think you're like almost there, you're going to see something else in art that makes it move further off. But that's always what it is, right? There's always like this drive. So in a sense, I doubt that few people are completely satisfied. I think that sort of frustration is kind of part of making stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to that diagram I sent you. You want to live. Learning is the area between comfort and danger.
Yeah.
And that's where I want to live.
Yep.
I want to always be learning. I want to be always a little bit out of my depth. Mm-hmm. Not so much that I become overwhelmed and just not move forward, but nor do I want to be in the area where I'm just phoning it in.
Don't phone it in, Jeffrey.
Don't want to phone it in. All right.
Derek.
Is that good? Derek. Yep. Wait, was that you? Yeah. Okay, no, you did all the Garys. Okay, Derek, Wes. Let the question flood begin. Indeed. How do you get yourself out of a pit of despair? I'm regularly getting overwhelmed with both my work, creative, and personal life, and trying to manage all of them is getting me low. Any personal words of wisdom, or just a metaphorical clip round the ear to buck myself up? You want to take this? You want to start this?
You want to take this one? You go ahead.
I am regularly a 6 out of 10. I live my life somewhere between a 4 and a 6 out of 10.
Okay. You're better off than me. Go ahead.
I am rarely what many would call happy, but I'm rarely despondent or depressed or what. I do get to those extremes,
yep,
but not very often.
Yep.
How do you get yourself out?
Yeah. Where I would be a 3 or an 8 and flip between the two.
Yeah.
Very rarely in the middle.
Yeah. You're
I'm either down or I'm way up.
Yeah.
Yep.
I
will tell you one thing that's, and this is going to sound really hokey, but something that's sort of changed my life has been exercise in a really weird way. I don't get the sort of depressions that I used to get,
mm-hmm,
now that I work out like five, six days a week. It's just some sort of like weird neurotransmitter endorphin thing or something. I don't know.
I don't think it's that weird. I mean, I think that's, there's science behind that.
Yeah, there certainly is. But like, I just, it sounds trite, but it actually is true.
I'm on my bike every day, and I notice the days where if I go a couple of days and not get on the bike, I notice it. I feel different.
Yeah. What is the quote from Mumford that we always bring up, where he's just like, it's confusing here. It's like, where? Life?
Yeah.
Like, life is overwhelming. Or at least can be I think we all have work and personal and creative life, and we're trying to manage and juggle all three of them, trying to come up with something that we find meaningful or satisfying or happiness, or, you know, however you want to define it.
I will say, if you are in a place and you use the word despair, and if you are really in a place of despair,
get some help.
I would talk to someone.
Yeah.
I really would.
Yeah. There's also, I think, a sense of feeling overwhelmed. I've found as I've gotten older that culling is a good thing. You know, figure out the things in your life that you're spending cycles on or are overwhelmed by that don't really matter to you for whatever reason, but you've held on to them for, you know what I mean? Sure. People in your life that make you miserable, but you keep them in your life. It's like, well, why are you keeping them in your life if they're just making you miserable? You know, I'm sort of coming to this sort of conclusion myself. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's interesting. It's a tough one. It's funny because I don't think that you or I mean, you're in a decent place right now, but I don't think either of us is like, yeah, let's go at this exact moment in time while we're recording the show.
I don't see myself ever in that position.
Right.
That's not me. I mean, if somebody asks me, if I meet somebody and they, hey, how you doing? I'm okay.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Both from the standpoint of I'm okay, not great, not bad,
yeah.
But also I'm okay.
Yeah. Jeffrey would also like to suggest that you get a cup of coffee because that always makes him feel better.
Coffee is a good thing. Yeah. I afford myself not a lot of coffee, but I do enjoy a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it is soul crushing and very difficult, I would talk to someone. I do. Bill does. You know?
Yeah. Sometimes I talk to people.
Yeah.
Bobby Tingle, how do you break the ice and get somebody comfortable for a portrait shoot that you cannot do research beforehand? Some people are just people, I guess. I don't know, Bobby, are you a people person? I talk to them and get them talking about what they do and what they're interested in. And if that doesn't work in the sense that they're either too nervous or they're the kind of person who doesn't like talking to get comfortable, those people probably do get comfortable when other people are talking in the sense that they don't like the silence. But if you're sitting there telling them a story and it gives them something to put their attention on, that can work too. It can be tricky, you know. You can always go to the boring stuff like weather and where you grew up and where you're from and that kind of stuff. And sometimes that can lead to other places like, oh, where'd you grow up? Oh, North Carolina. Oh man. Yeah. I went to the Outer Banks once, like where in North Carolina, you know what I mean? Like you can start to sort of tease out and be just like, oh man, what was it like down there? And how different is it than being in New York or whatever, you know? And then that people talking about themselves, if you can get them talking about themselves in a way that doesn't feel like you're tricking them into talking about themselves, they'll soon forget they're getting their picture taken, or at least it'll, their mind's on something else. You know, they're not thinking
might
about
lessen
their,
the severity of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not, I sort of have the, I can do that. That's one of my superpowers, you know, is just to like talk to people. I'm not saying I'm the best at it or whatever it is, but I'm comfortable talking to anybody, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I know a lot about a lot of things. So if somebody says they're, you know, like this weekend at the wedding, one of the girls, you know, I have a weird thing where I want to ask a question of somebody that makes them go, wow, that's a good question. Like something that's a little off the beaten path, you know?
Sure.
Like I was talking to this, child psychologist. She introduced herself and I said, let me ask you a question. I said, when you're working with children, how do you know something is an actual problem versus just being a developmental stage that they're going through? And she was like, wow, that's a good question. And I was like, ha, I got her, you know,
right.
But it's, there's like a satisfaction and sort of now they got to think about it. And when they're thinking about it, they're not thinking about getting their picture taken. Now this is at a wedding. I wasn't taking their picture, but that's that. I don't know. Bobby's got a question for you too. Jeffrey Storrs, has anybody ever looked at one of your paintings and asked what kind of brushes you paint with?
No, and it's one of the things I love about it. No, they don't, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I wonder if another painter, though, would ever come to you and be like, hey, wait, how'd you get the medium to do that? Like, what kind of medium did you use?
That's different, I think. Yes.
Is that different?
I think it is, because one is hardware, the other is technique.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah,
I have conversations with Father Bill about technique. I don't know what kind of brushes he uses, but I do know what kind of gel he uses because I use the same gel. I use the same paint. We both use Nova Color, and I used it at his suggestion, not because of the brand of paint, but because of the properties of it.
Yes.
You know, their colors are very intense. The chroma is very intense. Their gels, their matte gel has a terrific finish on it, and it's different than the golden matte gel or matte medium.
Golden Nova, makes good stuff, don't they, in general?
Golden makes terrific stuff. Yeah, I use both. I use Golden Fluid Acrylics. I use Nova Color Matte Medium and Gloss Medium. But then I also use the Golden Gloss Medium as well, because it's got a different body to it. It's got a different finish than the Nova Color stuff.
Yeah.
But their paints, their opaque paints especially, are amazing. And I never knew about them until they were suggested to me.
Yeah.
But brushes, no. I typically don't use, I mean, if you do want to know, I don't use great brushes. I use scenic fitches, set painting brushes.
So not very fine grain.
Not at all. Brushing. I don't use like fine, like sable or yeah. None of that.
But you're not doing that kind of work.
No, not at all.
So it wouldn't help you at all. In fact, it would probably be harder to clean and whatever it is. But if you were sort of one of those photorealistic guys who's putting on a dollop of paint per pixel or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then you have to use the super fine stuff.
Or, you know, Greg Simpkins goes by Crayola. I like his work a lot. He uses, well, now he's got his own line of brushes, but he uses a very different quality of brush than I would, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to get some paints and start painting, start getting some Bob Ross things online and start.
Oh, there is a genius. There is a genius take. It's called, I'll find it. Maybe we can talk about it next week. It's called Glengarry Bob Ross. It's hysterical.
They merge the two?
Yeah.
Right, it's like note, Bob put Ross. Put a note in the next show. Yeah.
Glengarry Bob Ross. All right.
That's funny. Ooh, this is a hard one, Jeffrey. The next one from Freddie is difficult. What piece, photo, painting, writing, anything, would you consider your finest work to date? What recent piece would you consider your least successful?
This is for you, right?
I think it's for both of us.
Okay, you go first. I need to think about this.
Yeah, me too. This is a tough one, actually. Finest work to date.
Let's see, finest. What does that mean?
Yeah, is that the one that makes you most happy? The one that you couldn't never lose? You know what I mean? Like
Is it the one that technique and concept merged in a flash of
I don't know.
Least successful is easiest because it's the one I painted over to create F to the Power of Three.
Oh, really? What, it wasn't doing it?
Oh, it was horrible. I never liked it. Yeah. I never liked it. So I painted over it, and then I painted over it again, and then I really like what I ended up with, but
I did a portrait shoot for a magazine a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago.
Wow. My finest work today.
That I can't show you guys cause it's an embargo, but like I went in and I had to shoot this woman and it was,
what are you shooting? Yakuza members? What is that? It's an embargo. What are they going to take your pinky?
No, I'm just saying that hasn't been in the magazine yet. So I can't show anybody. All that's right. How that works.
Well, when are you going to show new work, man? Come on.
What do you want to see? I what are you talking about? I put up like 16 different people in the corner in the course of like 4 weeks.
Right. When are you going to do new work? I want to see some client work. I want to see some portraits.
It's
of
funny.
Some famous
everything
people,
that
man.
I shot lately is not going to be in magazines for months, which is really weird. Like that thing that I was down in Philly for. Apparently, it's not going to be in a magazine until March or February or something like that.
And you can't post it to your portfolio until it goes into the magazine?
No. That's contracts. It's the way it works. But anyway, I had this magazine. I had to shoot this businesswoman for this magazine. It was like this board. She's on the board of directors of this big company and whatever. And I took these pictures of her. And we were working in a conference room that was maybe 8 by 12 feet. And it was reflective paintings screwed to the walls. So it was like reflections everywhere, not a single place to like work. And then there was a window with some cool buildings outside, but the window was massively dirty from the outside. Like it was just, you know, like hadn't been cleaned in a while. So I took all these pictures and I had like an hour with the woman, but we also had to take a bunch of pictures that were not, what's it called? Like not straight portraits. We had to have her like just having a conversation, because there was, that's the way the magazine does things. So there's like normal portraits and then ones where she just looks like she's sitting there talking to somebody. So you have to take a lot of those, because what you get is just somebody having a conversation with their mouth open weird a lot of times. But anyway, I came home and I was like, yeah, these pictures, I mean, they're fine, but they're really unsatisfying to me, and I wish I could do it over again. And that happens sometimes.
So recently, that's your least successful.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, that sucked. But you know, I mean, the art director was fine with it. Finest work, man. That's tough.
You know what? Writing, I would say probably the foreword that I did for Terry Schmidbauer's book. I was really proud of that.
Okay.
For his book Intervals, I really like that a lot.
Yeah.
Painting though, I don't know. Maybe One Nation Underground or Fields of Gold. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. There's also pictures that I really liked, like that picture I did, I call Ghost Story, where it's like people around a campfire and there's like a ghost behind the woman. I've always really liked that picture. I think because it came out almost exactly the way I wanted it to come out, and it was difficult technically. Like I had to do all kinds of neat stuff to make that work, and it's like a weird composite, and I had to like shoot flashes in both directions and warm them up and then add the fire. And I think it came out really good, and no one really notices it all that much, but I have a soft spot in my heart for it.
Right.
So there's lots of those kinds of things too. Or the picture of Conrad in the back of my father's car. I really like that one, but you know, is it because it's technically great or because I have, you know, certain feelings about it because.
Sure.
Know,
sure.
So how do you remember, you know, you can't difficult to figure this stuff out. Derek, what do you got?
Derek West, in an alternate dimension, what would you be doing? And would Skynet, have already won? in an alternate, like anything else?
What would you be doing?
I would be a character actor.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody like William H. Macy or Ed Harris or something.
Yeah. Talk to Patrick about that. He might be able to make that happen.
Yeah, definitely. That would be the thing.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, I probably would be a very good engineer. And I started doing that and sort of decided against it. But I had to do it over again, I probably would be happy doing that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing the different directions your life takes, you know?
Yep.
So completely different than anything. Let's see. Bobby Tingle, if hipsters take over the world, would we all be forced to shoot with Nikon DF? Is that the weird one that looks like an old F, but it's digital?
It looks DF? Like a Nikon, kind of an EM. I don't think that would be the one, though. I think it would probably be some sort of Johnny Ive co-designed Leica with no screen on it or something.
I like the... am I the only one who doesn't mind that DF?
I don't think it's bad. It just, you know, it wasn't well received. I think a lot of things were working against it. The fact that it doesn't do video, I think people really kind of jumped on that.
Yeah, but it's not that's the camera that's not supposed to do video. You know what I mean? It's very, like, if you want video, then go get the other one.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone always says, I want my Nikon F, but digital. It's like, well, here it is. And everyone goes, that's not what I wanted. It's like,
I think it was too expensive too.
Yeah, if this camera was $1,500, they would have sold a ton of them.
I think that's probably true.
What did it have a how big of a? Oh, it's only 16 megapixels. Interesting.
But it's full frame. You know, it's all magnesium.
I wasn't a Nikon guy, so I have no. That doesn't make me, you know, ooh and ah. But like, if Canon made a similar thing, like one like my little. Whatever AE-1 that my father had that, you know, but digital. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. Let's see. Tyler, my friend is about to have a baby in a couple weeks. They asked me if I wanted to practice in baby photography. They'd have me take photos of the newborn. I don't have any lighting gear. Should I try to pick up something? If so, what? Or would I be able to make it work with typical indoor lighting? Well, you could make it work with typical window lighting. Get a reflector if you don't have one, like a 5-in-1. That'll get you a lot of the way there.
Right.
You know, try to get the baby in some nice morning light off a window, and with modern cameras, shoot at 800 or whatever, ISO 800 if you have to. If babies are sleeping, short depth of field stuff with like a 50 is always looks good. You don't need to buy lighting. Look, all the things that we do for lighting are trying to replicate what the sun normally does, you know? So if you can get the sun to do it, more power to you. I was at, my friend Alex is, moving everything out of his studio. He's leaving his studio that he's been at for 10 years. And, I was at his place yesterday and he had, you're going to love this, Jeffrey. He had, like all these Comet packs and heads and all the rest of it, but he had these big giant Speedo packs and heads, 4,000 watt second packs.
Wow.
And he had four of them.
And what's he doing? Selling them?
He's going to sell them. Yeah. But like, it's tough. Cause no one wants these big giant honking things. Cause no one needs 4,000 watt seconds anymore. You know, right. Or the people who do, cause he's shooting with a Hasselblad with a phase back on it that shoots at ISO 50. And he's doing macro work or whatever it is. So he's, you know what I mean? Like he needs massive amounts of light, but it's so rare that people need that much light anymore. That it's tough. So it's like, it's just interesting that like we had all this stuff to try to recreate bright window light when nowadays sure. You just need window light, for a lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, I wouldn't buy anything. I tried to get a 5-in-1 reflector, get a lens that's got short depth of field to try to do some of that kind of stuff. And if the baby's moving around a lot, the trick is just to take a lot of pictures.
Yeah.
Because that's a luck of the draw. Next one.
All right. Emmett Collar, Bill Wadman, what's the photographic opportunity you should have taken? And on the flip, what picture do you wish you hadn't taken?
Well, that's a weird one, isn't it?
I don't know. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's the same kind of thing you ask actors. What, you know, what's the role you passed on? And then what's the flick you wish you hadn't done?
You know, when I met Terry Waite, who was one of my subjects for 365 Portraits, Terry was a hostage, I think in Lebanon for a number of years. He went in as a hostage negotiator and they took him hostage. How much would that suck?
Bad.
Yeah.
You know what's never a good idea? Being taken hostage in Lebanon.
Yeah. That might be worse than heroin. and the dude, I mean, like I'm 6'1", 210 pounds. This guy made me feel like I was tiny. Like he was a bear of a man. So all I could ever think was how many guys did they have to take this guy down and how many guns did they have? You know what I mean? Like just physically, cause this guy's a big guy. Anyway, while we were having tea after the picture, he was like, "Oh, I should introduce you to Vanessa Redgrave and Richard Branson." And he did. I have contact information for them. But I never wrote them because at the time I didn't feel like I was good enough, like worthy of it.
Right.
If that makes sense. And I probably just should have. And now it's too late. Why
is it too late?
Well, it's not too late.
Like he's a cool guy.
No, maybe I could write them, but just there's something that I haven't done that maybe I should do that.
Come on. He put on a space suit and walked around the beach.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool, right?
He likes doing that stuff.
Yeah.
God, that guy's a piece of work, isn't he?
I think he's amazing.
Would you rather be Branson or Jim Cameron?
Branson, heartbeat, no contest.
Would you rather be Branson or what's the Tesla guy? Elon Musk.
Branson.
Really? All right.
Richard Branson seems to really enjoy, and I maybe Elon Musk does as well, but
yeah.
Branson seems to revel in life. He seems to relish his life. And I like that. I mean, I like that. It's something that's outside of my wheelhouse, but I have these sort of romantic ideals of what it could be like.
Yeah. 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 Let's see. What picture do you wish you hadn't taken? Right. I did a job a few years ago for a client who turned out to be an absolute nightmare. And I never got paid, or I got paid half, and he wanted to sue me because he was so unhappy with the pictures. And it was this big, giant to-do. It was like the worst experience I've had working as a professional photographer, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, wow.
And so I wish I hadn't done that. And so now when people come to me, I had an acquaintance of mine call me a few weeks ago and be like, I need this picture and we need it you know, this week, you know, when can we shoot? Can we shoot tomorrow? And it's like, well, what are we shooting? What's it for? What's the budget? Where are we shooting? I don't know, but can we shoot tomorrow? And it's like, you sort of get this, you get this hunch that it's going to be more trouble than it's worth, you know? And I went on and had multiple phone conversations and this, that, and the other thing. And in the end, it's like, it never happened. And I was right. like, why did right, I right. just spend like 2 hours on the phone with you people stressing out, trying to make this work when you guys weren't ready to do it in the first place, you know? So there's lots of things like that, that I've learned to, if it really feels like it's going to be a bad time, I should listen to myself, like trust my instinct that the person's going to be a bad client and beg off.
Yep.
So yeah, that happens. Andrew Chevrier. Is that how you pronounce that? What do you think?
Maybe. Chevrier.
If working in more than one discipline, such as photography, videography, motion design, would you recommend having separate websites showing each portfolio for prospective clients, or would you consider separate websites for each area or separate areas on one website? I think is what he's trying to say.
One website.
Yeah, I think so. I used to do that. Like when I was still doing design and art direction work, and then I was doing flash coding and I was doing a little photography and I did music. I had all my stuff on one site.
I would say one site. It's what, you know, you're the brand in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's something that's a little bit different now than it was maybe 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where right now it's like, oh, being multi-talented is actually a strength rather than a weakness.
Yeah. Yeah. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you were the elephant. Now you're the flea.
Yeah, sure. Wait, what?
You don't know that story, the elephant and the flea?
Yeah, I know. I'm just giving you crap.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Okay, Jacob. Thibo speaker. Would you say that's Thibo? Thibo speaker.
Let's see. Sorry, Jacob. I'm writing something down. Jacob Thibo speaker. Spiker okay. speaker.
Spiker yeah, okay. speaker. Sorry, Jacob. You both talked briefly about the pieces of art or literature that made you get it or that struck your fancy for the medium. What types of things pull you in that way? Do you still get that feeling sometimes for something you've never seen before? For visual arts, photography, painting, etc., are there techniques that do this for you? I'm not sure how to boil this all down into one question, but your conversation about it struck me. I guess maybe the overall meta question is how and why do things stick out to you in a way that's meaningful.
Yeah. Now, Justin Weathersby asked a very similar question where he said, Jeffrey and I talked a lot about his work and I mentioned that it speaks to me and I don't know why, but more than most of it does. Why do you think the reason the specific art speaks to a person? Like I don't get Picasso, even in art classes, I don't get it. But I look at Fields of Gold and it reminds me of home when I was growing up. Am I just weird? So it's sort of a similar take on it.
Yeah.
Do you think that you like art that is the kind of, do you prefer the kind of art that you wish you yourself could make? Does that make sense?
No, because okay. my taste in art and music and even literature for that matter are all over the place. You know, I like expressionism. I like hyperrealism. I like modernism. I like sculpture. I like, you know, I like different styles of music. I like different styles of writing.
So what's the common denominator?
I don't think there is one.
Yeah.
I don't think there is one. I think the common denominator is sort of the way that my friend Patrick feels about workshops or DVDs. You know, it's like I want to absorb as much of it as I can. And if I pull away some little nugget, some little jewel or gem, then it was worth my time.
Yeah.
And I feel that way about painting. I feel that way about writing. I feel that way, or reading rather. I feel that way about music. I may not like the entire record, but there may be a song that I listen to over and over and over again. You know, or yeah. I may not like everything that this artist has done, but there's one painting or photograph that for some reason speaks to me. Yeah. And that becomes a favorite.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? That there's certain things you look at and it just works. Like when I was in, Philly last week at the Philadelphia Museum 2 weeks ago. And I was just looking at that Pollock, you know, the one that I like, one of the early ones with the numbers on it and stuff. Like, I like that far more than the Pollock drippy stuff, which is the stuff that he's known for to most people.
Right.
Why does that particular thing speak to me? I don't know. You know, why does de Kooning speak to me? But who's the guy who does the stuff that looks like giant comic books?
Lichtenstein.
That stuff does nothing for me. And people love it. And I just look at it and I go, he's blowing up comic books. I don't understand why. You know what I mean? Like, so it's very, very strange. You know, I'll look at Warhol and I think that these soup cans are pretty cool. I don't like the silkscreen stuff, mm-hmm. you know?
See, that's Warhol is somebody that I don't get at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never have.
Right. I like the discussions around Warhol work, but I don't particularly like his work very much, but I like the soup cans. So, you know, it's who knows why it does. My sister is a Chagall fan. I couldn't care less about Chagall. I look at it and go, what? Like there's a sheep and a cow and somebody jumping over somebody's head with a purple helmet on. Like, you know what I mean? Like it just goes right over right through me.
Sure.
Same thing with Matisse. I don't get Matisse. You know, but I do like Picasso, some Picasso, but not, you know, I don't like the really weird angled cubist stuff, but I do like the early sort of, So who knows, right?
I like jazz, but I don't like the really hardcore sort of bebop. The really sort of experimental improvisational stuff where Coltrane would just go off or Davis would just go off. I don't get it.
Right.
It just doesn't click for me.
Right. So, you know. And now the question, I guess, is do you think in much the way that Justin says that he says he doesn't like Picasso, even in art classes, I don't get it. Like, you know, even when it's being explained to me why it's good, because sometimes there are things where you look at some painting, you go, there's something about it, I don't know. And then somebody says, oh, it's because see the way that he did this and it makes your eye go like this around the painting. And it does, you know, like all those kinds of conversations. And sometimes you appreciate it more after that kind of stuff.
I completely agree. And I've felt very much that way about Mark Rothko.
Yep.
Or Helen Frankenthaler.
Which is funny because I think of Rothko as a very sort of blink kind of artist. Like either you like the color combination or you don't.
But it's that whole genre of sort of color field paintings. You're not meant to see them in a book. You're not meant to see them in a text. You're meant to stand in front of them.
6 by 8 feet on the wall.
Yeah, at a prescribed distance so that they become your field of view. And you're expected to look at them, look into them, and let those colors, you know, affect the sort of rods and cones in your eyes. Yep. And you know, so learning that and standing in front of them, I developed a greater appreciation. Yep.
Although I saw a Rothko show at the National Gallery 15 years ago where they had like 50 paintings, like they got them from everywhere and brought them all in one place kind of thing. And it was really odd to me that some of them worked and some of them didn't to me. Like I go to one and be like, oh, that's amazing. And then I go to the next one and go, he missed it on that one.
But how is that any different than, you know, photography, you know, one photograph by someone?
It absolutely is. It's absolutely the same. I'm just saying that like, it's funny how ultimately it's like either it clicks for you or it doesn't. And why that happens, who knows? Maybe it's different for different people.
Could remind you of childhood. It could remind you.
Why do you and I like Saul Leiter? Drink.
Yeah. Yeah. Drink. Yeah. Drink.
You know, we do, but I'm sure there's people who listen and look at our pictures, look at Saul Leiter, look at, you know, Crudson or look at Karsh and they go, I don't understand why Bill and Jeffrey like this guy.
Yeah. Why do I care about Fred Herzog? He's wandering around Vancouver. So what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know that. I don't know if there's a good answer, Jacob or Justin. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, you know, a whole thing. Let's see. Chris Brannon. Did you see this email he sent
in? No. What is this? 500 pixels. I missed this.
Okay. So he said to the winds beneath my wings.
Wow. Thank you, Chris.
Oh, that's good. I snorted. Okay.
You did. I was going to let it go, but
I can't remember exactly at what point in the show you guys were talking last week, but Bill made a comment, something along the lines of let's all spend the day on 500 pixels looking at beautiful photographs. I was saying that there were just so much stuff out there. You could spend your whole day doing it. Right.
Sure. 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 Sure.
So he went there. He's like, that's a good idea. And he went over there and he ended up in a gallery of black and white nudes. And he couldn't look at them because it was considered adult content and he had to accept the thing. So he made an account thinking that like once he was verified, he could just go clicking on whatever and look at it. But even with an account, he had to click on each one. Like basically right. they just have this like censorship.
Yeah, there's thing, a little, right? there's a little black wall yep. thing. You've got to say, you know, yeah.
Right. Okay. So he said, look at how long it took us to go after these sleazeball athletes who beat their spouses, children, blah, 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 blah. But Newman's career was almost ruined because he believes his children should be allowed to express themselves openly in the backyard. Anyway, you guys have a lot of questions to get through, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on how 500 Pixels has chosen to censor their site and others, I guess we could say. Why do you think they did it? And if they are making the problem worse by treating it like porn rather than having an open mind and saying, no, this is art. If you don't like it, then, you know, here's some trees you can look at. I understand what he's saying. What do you think?
I think 500 Pixels handles it pretty well. Where the rub is I think it's incumbent on the photographer to choose whether or not that flag is enabled per image. In fact, I know it is.
Oh, it's up to the photographer. Okay.
Right, right. There's no sort of, you know, algorithm that scans and goes, oh, well, we see boobs. So this is, we're going to flag this. You've got to select it.
And if you don't flag it.
If you don't, then it's just available for the world to see. Now, I don't know if there's some sort of accountability built in. You know, I don't know if 500 Pixels employees or agents or whatever are scanning through things, going, "Hey, you need to enable the privacy screen on this."
Right.
But I think I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Erring on the side of caution, going, okay, if you're going to be looking at this, sitting at work on your lunch hour, and you just happen to flip through this gallery of images, maybe you don't want a bunch of nudity to pop up on the screen.
Right, so maybe there's a checkbox in the upper right hand corner that says, you know,
you can still look at it if you want to, but we're just not going to show it to you right off the bat.
Right. But maybe there's a way to maybe there's a way in your account to say, you know what, just turn off all the censorship things. I just want to click on.
And there, I think that there is, I'm not sure.
But is there, I guess the bigger point is, why can't our society get over the fact that naked people is not a bad thing?
Well, you know, that's a big question, and 500 Pixels isn't going to solve it.
Fair enough. Yeah. This is part of the reason why I don't really stick my stuff up on Flickr and 500 Pixels and stuff. It's just like, ugh, you know, it's like I can display them the way I want to display them on my site, and I don't have to go to buy anybody's terms and conditions, you know?
That said, I don't think there's anything wrong with giving someone a heads up that may be scrolling across your gallery.
No, true. I don't know. He seems very upset with it. I agree that it's sometimes, I mean, some of the pictures are very, very tame, and it's like, okay, you didn't really need to mark that one, you know?
Right.
But people do. People are weird about that kind of thing. Let's see.
All right. What do we got? Credens P.
Yeah.
Okay. When I heard you talking about the iPhone 6, 6 Plus this week, it seemed as if those were your only options. After seeing the new iPhones, I'm seriously considering Android. Are you guys firmly iPhone guys, or might you go another way? I am firmly an Apple guy because I am invested in the Apple ecosystem.
Apps-wise, like apps you've paid for?
Both. Apps that I've paid for or just free apps that I use. I'm too far invested in the system,
yeah.
in the ecosystem.
I will tell you, as somebody who it looks like I'm going to have to pay... The way it works out, I'm going to end up having to pay for my phone, right? I'm going to buy it outright,
right?
Because of contractual stuff and whatever. And it's $649. Well, you want the 64 gigs, so that's $749. Okay, you want AppleCare, it's $849 plus tax. It's $723 for me to buy a cell phone. That is hard to swallow when for $350 I can get the OnePlus One phone for like one third the price, you know?
If you had an invite, number one.
Yeah. But or the you know, Moto X is $499 or whatever it is. I can see how that is a thing. And I have had Android phones before, and both you and I have Nexus tablets, and
I had one.
Yeah. I'm fine with Android. Mostly though, I don't do that much on my phone. You know, I email, I Twitter, I browse the web. I do take pictures, and the six cameras has gotten stellar reviews, and there are only a couple Android phones that seem to have cameras that are up there, and it's, I go back and forth. I do, however, I must say that the fact that if my phone breaks, I can go to an Apple store and they'll swap it out or fix it or replace it, and I don't have to like ship it to Hong Kong to get it fixed.
Yep.
That's a pretty big thing. Like if Apple didn't do that and Motorola did, you know, Motorola had stores around, that would lean me towards Motorola.
Hey, look, that's part of why you're paying more.
Yeah,
I think
it is. It is a lot of money for a phone.
I bought a 4S. It had a problem. They replaced it.
Yeah.
I had a problem with another one. They replaced it. I had a problem with a third one. They upgraded me to a 5.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, again, the ecosystem with iOS 8, I think iOS 8 does more right than it does more than it does wrong.
Yeah.
The integration. By the way,
did you figure out the, you can do exposure compensation in the standard iOS 8 camera app now?
Yes, it's just a horrible little
terrible
slider.
Interface.
It's a bad implementation. If you're looking for manual control and you're using iOS 8, Camera Plus is the best game in town right now.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
I'm going to give it a month for see what people come up with.
Yeah, I really like how Camera Plus implemented the EV is just a swipe left and right. You can adjust shutter speed. You can
now. To be fair, Android has had an EV slider since version 2. You know,
sure.
I mean? So yeah, there have been,
but it's an EV slider on a crap camera by and large.
Yeah, yeah, there are some good cameras over there, but a lot of them are junk.
Not many.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think in answer to your question, I was going to say that in many ways, I just want my phone in particular to just be an appliance. Like I don't want to have to think about it. I don't want to, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And even though I'm a big Google user, like most of the stuff on my phone, it's Gmail, it's Chrome, it's, you know what I mean? Like I'm using all the Google stuff, even on iOS. I don't know. Could go. I mean, look, if I had to tomorrow, sure. Or if I didn't have the $900 for the iPhone and I wanted a new phone, sure. You know, the little $200 Moto G doesn't have a great camera, but it's a great phone otherwise, you know?
Yeah. It depends on, you bring up a good point. It depends on what you're using it for.
Yeah.
You know, I love the camera on my phone. I shoot with my iPhone more than I shoot with my Fuji.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Where I would like to use my camera more, although I've been... Overall, I'm unsatisfied generally with the pictures I take with my phone. By the way, did you see that picture of the flash tube I put up yesterday?
Yes.
How cool was that?
With like all the stainless steel.
It's
stuff
magnesium.
Inside of it. Is it really?
Yeah. It's magnesium basically with like a light bulb thing to spark the magnesium.
Nice.
Oh, it's so cool. All right. Does that answer that question?
Yes.
Jonas, do you care about the science behind photography? Does it interest you what happens at a molecular level when you observe an image appear on a blank sheet of paper in a dark room? Are you satisfied with the knowledge that the smaller aperture, the greater the depth of field, or do you feel the need to know why that is? When you point your camera at someone to take their portrait, do you want to understand the situation from a psychological viewpoint? Yes, all of the above. I don't know that my chemical skills are quite at the level to... I'm not interested in the actual, like, let's talk about the chemical equation, you know, the transformation of the thing. Like,
sure.
I've been reading that, what's the book I was reading? I can never remember the name
of it. The Talbot one?
Yeah, the one about Talbot and Daguerre. Yeah, yeah. But I read a chapter every few nights when I can't go to sleep. And they get in a little bit about, why this silver nitrate thing was better when they added ether as the thing that exposed it, whatever. It's like, okay... that develops it. And it's sort of like, okay, that's fascinating. And that's enough information for me. I personally don't need to know the chemical reaction, you know, or rather
it doesn't make it any less magical for me.
No. And even like the optical stuff, like I'm fascinated by optics, but like it quickly mathematically gets way beyond me. And I took a few semesters of calculus, but it gets, you know what I mean? Like it gets out there. So yeah, psychologically. Oh, absolutely. Like I'm fascinated. That's why I take portraits. Cause I love the idea of like psychologically analyzing the person. My shoots tend to feel more like therapy sessions than they do photo shoots. How about you? What do you think about all this stuff?
Again, I love the science behind it, but it doesn't take the alchemy away.
Yeah. Part of why I like photography is that it is part science and part art, you know? That there is all the stuff that is involves like you need to know these things and the way that light works and the way that light falls off and how this reflects to this and how this matters. Like there is a technical side to it that fascinates me, which is why moving away from cameras that sort of, you know, moving towards cameras that do everything automatically and stuff isn't as much fun to me.
Yeah. It's a double-edged sword. It's interesting.
I like
but
the
it also,
craft of the technique. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a tendency to fetishize all that crap.
Yes. That's the problem, is that you can go so far to where you can't give it up.
Yeah.
You know, like my buddy with an entire closet full of flash bulbs.
Right.
You know, it's like, when are you going to use those? Well, I bought them. You know, he's very excited. By the way, he's right. selling a 4x5. What's not the speed graphic? What's the other foldable little camera like that?
Graflex?
Yeah. Maybe, well, not the speed graphic. It was a Graflex camera. Like one of those, yeah, one of those little foldable 4x5s with the flash bulb thing on the side and the whole thing. He's got this crazy kit that he's going to get rid of, but I was going to get a rundown of what's in the box, and I was going to put it up on the group to see if somebody who is really interested in that stuff wanted it.
Yeah, you should.
All right, Ben McCarthy, this one, ben you McCarthy. Were emailing with him.
Yeah.
Ben's only 20.
I know. Screw that guy.
I know.
Ben.
Children.
If that is your real name.
Yeah. Make sure you don't mention the name of the shop.
Yeah, I'm not going to. Okay. So let's see. How do we run this down? Basically, he was hired. He was hired to shoot the interior of a shop.
Yep.
Okay. And doesn't matter what the shop is, but he was hired to shoot the interior. And he was shooting in a couple separate locations. And in one area was photographing people in public, their reactions, etc. Okay.
Yep.
And during part of the shoot, he says an older man, maybe 50s or 60s.
Was it Jeffrey? I didn't know you were in Dublin.
You notice how I paused right there to let you jump in? See that?
Go ahead.
Dick. He stood up from his table and come up to me and complain. It went something like this. It's probably okay to read this exchange,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Him, you do not have permission to be taking photos of me. Ben responds, my apologies. I'll be sure not to include any photos that you might be in. Him, well, I did not give you my permission. Me, I couldn't possibly ask everyone for their permission before taking photos. There are over 100 people in the area at the time. Him, why are you taking them? What are they being used for? Me, for this
place.
Shop, for the website and promotion. At this point, he stared me down for about 15 or 20 seconds before leaving. My problem is not with people being uncomfortable. I've dealt with that before. But this guy was rude and aggressive. The real issue I got flustered by him is that I got flustered by him and it impacted the rest of the shoot.
Yeah, that happens.
So I guess I don't know what the question is. He does ask how much of it was down to his age.
Yeah, because he's a child. And
well,
you're a
snot-nosed little bastard, yeah. Ben. That's all there is.
I mean, there's a number of things here. One is a shop or a restaurant a public place? Even if it's not a public place, it is a place where they can have, say, have a sign on the wall that says, you know, by being here eating your food or whatever it is, you are.
Okay, there are a lot of things going on here. Let's say man is in the 50s or 60s. Maybe just he's not that comfortable, you know, having photographs taken of him.
Yep. But this seems to be worse now than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Is it because more people have more cameras, more taking more pictures?
Maybe.
And there's sort of this fear that, oh, what's it being used for?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It seems like, Ben did the best that he could given the situation in explaining, hey, these are for promotional purposes for this shop. Yep. I'm not here without permission. I am sort of sanctioned by the shop owners. I don't know. This is
it's funny if he was there for him, if he was just saying I'm taking pictures of people in the thing for this art project and they're long exposures or whatever it is, you know.
Right.
In some ways he'd have more to stand on than if they're being used for website and promotional stuff, the guy actually has an argument to say, I don't want to be in these pictures.
Right. There's a commercial component there.
Right. Where if it was just for art, at least in the US, I don't know how it is where Ben is, you know?
Right.
It's tough. People get weird about that kind of stuff. You know, it is annoying though. He said, you know, you don't have my permission to take my picture. It's like, well, dude, you're not in your living room. You know, you're in a public place. He doesn't need your permission to take your picture. He technically needs your permission if he's going to use it for website and promotional stuff. If you really want to get anal about the legal side of it, I think, you know, but he doesn't need your permission just to take your picture. He needs your permission to do something with the picture, but not just to take it.
That's a legalese gray area.
Yeah.
That's a semantic.
Yeah. But if Ben took the picture of the guy, he didn't do anything wrong. The guy doesn't have to give him permission just for Ben to take the picture.
Right. You know?
It's tricky. And you know what he said, how, he got flustered and that happens too. But I mean, that happens with any shoot, you know, like you're shooting portraits of somebody and they're weird about it. You know, then you're like, oh, you feel like you're on your heels a little bit.
Yeah. I think what he was trying to get to though, is this was more aggressive and antagonistic and that it wasn't just an uncomfortable situation. Yeah. There was this sort of fear component there.
I've been in a handful of situations like this. This is actually one of the reasons why I don't do as much street photography as some other people. Cause I don't like these sort of interactions.
The confrontational aspect. Though.
Yeah. It's just like, mm-hmm.
Confrontation.
I'm just trying to walk around with my headphones on taking pictures. And now I'm getting in a fist fight with some guy on the street. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
It's tricky. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, Jeffrey's right. You dealt with it as well as you could, but I don't know what the answer is, you know? I mean, the only other way you could do it is have a sign outside as they're walking in saying, hey, we're doing a photo shoot, by coming in and whatever it is, you're giving your permission.
Sure.
You know, so maybe they do that for half an hour one morning, you know, and anybody who has a real issue with it, well, they can, you know, it's not a bad way of doing it. That's the way they do it. Like on the street too. Sometimes, you know, if you walk past this block, you may be in this movie.
Right.
So suck it up.
Right. 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 Right.
Yeah. You see that a lot in LA, right?
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, in L.A. last week, filming commercials downtown, and there was a model shoot going on in front of the Standard Hotel, and
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it was funny. I asked the cop. I said, "Do we really need another commercial?" And he just kind of shrugged, and he's like, "Somebody does."
Yeah, that's funny. You know, I was thinking about that the other day. I was listening to This American Life was talking about who's the guy who wrote all the ads for Volkswagen and stuff. The whole like Think Small. You know those classic ads?
Right, right, right.
And I thought about the fact that let's say take Volkswagen, for example, right? New Volkswagen comes out, there would be like two or three ads, but they'd run those ads for months in all kinds of magazines. So you'd see the same ad over and over again.
Right.
Now, for say Nike, they do 6,000 ads and they run each one twice.
Yes.
Well, it just seems like it's actually not as effective overall, because you're not sort of building this thing where you're like, oh, I remember that ad. I've seen that before. It's just sort of like this noise of stuff.
Well,
coming
there is psychologically and the sort of buying habits behind it. Repetition does build brand awareness, but it doesn't make you more likely to buy.
Yeah.
There is no connection that way.
But I also feel like a bunch of noise doesn't make it any better either. I feel like it's sort of like, come up with one good idea of what you think is the reason why people should buy this stuff and make one or two ads. Don't try to like every single angle and every single format and hire 73 different photographers to shoot these people with these clothes on 20 different ways. You know, it all just feels like it ends up becoming like, I have no idea what brand is what and what they make, because it's just noise in these ads.
And what I'm supposed to take away from it.
Yeah. You know, like you look at some ad and you're like, okay, wait, who's, is this the shoe company or the people who make the sunglasses or the Coke in the girl's hand? Like,
right, right.
You know, unless
and
you go
once
look
in
at the,
a while, a great one comes along.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the Got
the
Milk
Old Spice
ads were
guy.
Great. Yeah. Yep. The Old Spice guys, the Just Do It, the Think Difference.
But it's because it was one good idea that they just showed a billion times. You know what I mean? And I feel like there needs to be more of that. I don't know. In my opinion, I'm an old guy. Dave Lawrence, assume you could time travel. Which one period in all of history would you want to be a photographer? What would you shoot? Wait, all of history or since photography was invented?
Should we limit No. He says all of history.
Okay, so you happen to have a camera in first century BC and you're hanging out with St. Peter. Is that what you're saying?
Renaissance.
Renaissance, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think being in the Renaissance would be as exciting as you'd think. I think maybe the 1920s would be pretty cool.
I don't know.
I don't want to go back.
Do I have money or am I just a peasant with a camera?
And do I have a box of antibiotics with me?
Exactly. 20s would be fun. 20s, 30s.
You know, I've heard that if I was going to say I want to be a portrait photographer and we were going to keep it to like the last century or whatever it is, I'd probably choose the 60s. Because people still sort of respected photography as something that wasn't just like something everyone did. And so when you're shooting people, it was a little more weight to the shoot. Although economically, I hear the 80s were rip roaring. Friend of mine was in like an off, like out of a big city in like a second tier market. And in the 80s, he was making $1,500 a day in the 80s. And his phone is ringing off the hook and his rent at his studio is $300 a month.
What, making portraits?
Portraits and commercial shots for ads and that kind of stuff. But like, you know, just money in a way that there isn't today, you know?
Yeah.
I heard a story of, a different guy was actually telling me, remember the Cherevkov, the guy we talked about a few weeks ago, the guy
yes.
I met?
Yes. Omni.
Yeah. He used to assist that guy. And he was telling a story of how he once wanted grass for a shoot. And so he ordered, now remember, this is the 1980s. So this isn't no internet, right?
Right.
He wanted 10 by 10 feet, 100 square feet of grass sod delivered overnight from California. Right. And it cost like $1,000, you know, because you could do that kind of stuff in an ad back then. You know what I mean? Like we're now there's no budget to do crazy stuff like that.
Right. Do it in post.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, take pictures of some grass. Anyway,
interesting. Have somebody build it in 3D.
Yeah.
Call the IKEA guy.
Exactly. so are you sticking with, when are you sticking with the Renaissance?
I don't know. No. Cause it probably has to have a camera. I don't know. Late 40s, early 50s Paris, what Avedon did there, that looks pretty amazing.
Yeah, I would go more mid-50s just because of the war and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah.
Europe was a mess for a while. Let's see. Last question. You want this one?
John Westrock. Do you think it's more difficult to create something original these days than, say, 30 years ago? So what would that be? That would have been... 70s,
1980s. 1980. Yeah. Let's say 80s.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think it's always difficult to create something original.
I think you can see more stuff now and you can find more stuff that's like what you're making. So it makes you feel like you're less creative. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Like you can find examples of what similar examples to what you're doing.
Just by the idea that there's so much more of it.
And you know what? There are like twice as many people in the world as there was in 1980. So,
right.
So right. Just right there, you're doubling everything. So just from a numbers game, absolutely. It's more difficult.
Yeah. But I think it's always difficult to create something.
Yeah.
Original.
Yeah. But then again, what does original mean? Nothing's 100% original. So it's like, you know, everyone takes something and puts their spin on it and that becomes something different, you know?
Right.
There are a few examples in, you know, people could even say in science, it's like, well, Einstein came up with this theory of relativity. It's like, well, Mach was coming up with ideas like that in the 1880s, talking about like relative perspective of stuff. And you know what I mean? Like, so everyone's working on something somebody else started, you know, maybe Isaac Newton, right, was one of the few people who came up with just crazy original ideas. Everyone else is like working off of stuff.
I think the pressure to create something original is more.
Yes, I agree. Oh, you know what? That reminds me. Okay, so my buddy Alex he had a bunch of stuff in his place that he was trying to get rid of, right? So he had this brand new muslin in a box from like 30 years ago that he never used, that he bought and loved. And he's like, oh, you should come take it. Just come take it. And I was like, okay. Thanks. So in the box was this piece of paper, and it says, James Bright Backgrounds presents, quote, the care and feeding of your original muslin.
Nice.
Okay, so it goes on and on and on, saying what you should shoot it for and whatever it is. And now here's the last, this is the last paragraph. It says, remember, today's photographers and the buyers of photographs are changing. The old standard head and shoulder shot may well be become a thing of the past, except in policed mugshots, exactly where they belong. Electronic imaging, music videos, eccentric ads from advertising industry are all saying, let's do it a little different. These industries have been using muslins for years. Today's commercial portrait photographers now have to use them as a standard tool. Try them. You just might be surprised. And I just read that and I go, see, everyone always thinks it's the end of the world. You know, that everything's changing, that the way you used to do it isn't, you know, you can't do it that way anymore.
Right.
It's always been, you know. So it's interesting. I think it's harder to be creative just because there are more people and stuff, but I think it's always been so. So is it more so?
Sure. That inner struggle is always there.
Yep.
And resistance, to borrow a term from Stephen Pressfield, is always there.
Yep. And your ability to be seen is both helped and hurt by, say, the technology. You know what sure. I mean? Like, everything's a sure. double-edged sword. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
How'd the group do this week in their pictures?
You know, come on. The group does great every week. A lot of great stuff. Let's see. Independent study. Who did that? Fielding. Cool picture of these like knife forms apparently that she has.
Oh, I like those. Yeah.
Nicholas apparently found a restaurant where if you are over 350 pounds, you eat free. So good on you. Good stuff from Andrew, Hugh. I like his commuted sentences thing. That's that series. That's cool. Good stuff from David Lawrence. Beautiful color in these up close pictures.
Yeah.
Love the portrait from Freddie Clark, the militiaman. Did you see that?
Yep. Yep.
What a character that guy is.
He has a good face.
Jason Randolph, a beautiful little portrait of his daughter, sleeping. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah, just lots of really, really great stuff this week. Preston continues to find really cool places in Portland to shoot. Yeah, I love it. I love this stuff. We'll think of some new assignments and maybe some collaborative assignments. I like that. I forget who.
Yeah, that's a fun idea.
Yeah. But this week, transportation is the assignment. Transportation. So planes, trains, automobiles, UFOs.
Okay.
Vans with tin foil over the windows, whatever.
I have some ideas for that one.
Transportation.
Okay.
David Williams, nice shot on the tarmac at SFO.
Yeah, certain subjects, including airplanes, are always fun.
Mm-hmm. Wayne Hatfield, Brother Ridge, posted some beautiful shots of like stretches of highway with a misty sunrise or sunset. Gorgeous, really great light. I'm just scanning through. Chris Ainsley, cool on the job photos. Yeah, lots of neat stuff.
The group's good.
Yeah. Gavin Wu, the most patient, what is that, a collie? Most patient collie I've ever seen.
Transportation.
Like the little treat on her his or her nose. Yeah, transportation. So could be literal, could be figurative. Again, have some fun with it.
Yep.
Maybe we'll mix it up. Maybe we'll do a theme and like you've got to do three variations on a theme. You know, you've got to do diptychs or triptychs or we'll do some lens. Like you've got to shoot at 50. And if you don't have a 50, borrow one or tape off your 24 to 70 at 50.
Yeah. Everyone's got 50 somewhere.
Something like that.
I like 50s. You know, yeah. I will say that that's one thing about shooting with a phone that like sometimes it's just too wide. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you're stuck sort of that wide because there just isn't a lot of resolution to shoot that wide and then crop a whole lot. You ever try any of those attached lenses?
On what? My phone?
On a phone?
Yeah. No. Patrick's got the all-eclip and he really likes them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll have to try some of those.
I think there's a, isn't there a Lens Baby now for the iPhone?
Is there?
That's, I think they have one now.
That's cute and silly. I like it.
It's cute and silly. John Jennings, hydroponic greenhouses of far west Texas. It's a cool shot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of weed.
Oh, boy. All right. Who's our photographer of the week?
Allegedly. Oh, this is a great one. Great photographer.
I'm reading her website as we speak.
Yeah. Amy Vitale. Incredible photojournalist, documentarian, photo story shooter. She is terrific. I've been a fan of her for years, and I absolutely love her work. She has shot all over the world. She's got a lot of really cool stuff on her blog, kind of context surrounding her photographs, why she shoots, what she shoots, what she's trying to accomplish with her photographs.
She travels a lot.
She does travel a lot. You can order prints from her site. I don't know what her prints run.
Let's see. I was about to look. Keep going. I'll look them up.
You'll find?
I'll find it.
I can't say enough about her work. She is
not cheap. 11 by 14s are 250, goes up to 20 by 30s for 900.
See, I think that's
well, no, oh, the 200, 250 is unsigned. It's 450 for a signed 11 by 14.
Yeah, I'm okay with unsigned. I just want the image. I don't care about your signature real much, really. So she is a, as you can now see on her website, she's a Nikon ambassador, which I don't really know what that means. I would assume that it maybe means some
she gets free cameras.
Travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. But gosh, I really like her work. And if you are fans of sort of classic photo narrative, I think you'll really like her work.
Yep. Totally.
Very, very good stuff. So, Amy Vitale.
I was just looking at her work. It's there's scenes of her. Like, I just did a search for her on Google Images, and there's a picture of her like standing in standing water, like walking basically down a street that's flooded. You know, in Bangladesh.
Yeah,
and all I can think of is like, God, the idea of being in that water just makes my whole like biological system freak out.
Yeah.
Like there's no way you come out of that not getting sick. Just not
she
possible.
She really kind of embeds herself for her stories.
Yeah.
She
dresses up like a panda.
She goes deep.
Yep.
The stuff that she did in Angola is some of it's tough to look at.
Yep.
Some of it is heartbreaking to look at. And I would love to have a conversation with her about that aspect of her work. How do you see some of the things that you see and remain the artist or the documentarian and sort of put the human side aside for a few moments?
Yeah.
You know, and allow yourself to get the job done. That type of photojournalism.
Well, we've had that discussion of, trying to. Well, especially with the war stuff, you know.
Yeah, and I would like to have the discussion with someone who does it, not just sort of subjectively from afar. I'd love to see what's in what that takes.
Well, I think you should give her a call and have her be in process.
Yeah, I don't know that I could do it.
info@amyvitale.com.
Yeah,
send her an email. I'm sure you'll make it work.
She seems like, if you watch her in videos or read her work, she seems like she's very sweet.
Plus she dresses up like a panda. Have you seen this?
Yeah, you said that. Yeah.
It's really cool. To take pictures of pandas. See? On her Facebook group. I sent you a link.
Do you really think the pandas wouldn't know, though? Are they not clever enough to know?
Are pandas really that stupid? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, if a cow dressed up like a human, I'd know.
Yeah, but you're a human, not a cow, so. Actually, I don't know if that's true. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, look at her. That's kind of strange.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love her stuff. So go check her out.
Yep.
Yeah. Fun. Yeah, we had a lot more questions that we just couldn't get to, but
there's mm-hmm. always another one.
There's always another one. Yeah.
We're at about 2 hours now, so that was
all good. All right, so podcast@ontakingpictures.com.
Yep.
Bill tweets at Bill Wadman. I tweet at Jeffrey Sidoris.
Yep.
We'll have, you know, keep an ear to or an eye on the group, and we'll keep things moving.
Exciting.
Yeah. Lots of stuff coming up.
All right. We already have like a chock full show for next week.
Yeah. Next week, some good discussion, I think.
Glengarry, Bob Ross.
Glengarry, Bob Ross.
Oh, that's genius.
I buy my art supplies in a $80,000 BMW. You buy yours in a Hyundai.
Is that what it says?
It's yeah. It's funny. Funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We'll discuss that next week. Bye, right. Jeffrey.
All right. See you. Thanks for listening, everyone.
This way, say what you want to say, though I know your words will lay me out, so I can hear you think out loud, going through your thoughts the way I have for too long. This way, say what you wanna say. I know what you will say. Will leave.